Now we come to chapter 6, and our subject here is a king who could not sleep at night. This king here had a very restless night indeed. And we want to look at this now. On that night could not the king sleep, and he commanded to be brought the book of records of the Chronicles, and they were read before the king. Now, this seems to be a trifle. Doesn't seem to be very important indeed, but this is a sleepless night for the king, and I'm of the opinion he'd had many of them. And the ruler in that day, and I'm of the opinion that there are many of them today, as Shakespeare put it, heavy hangs the head that wears the crown. And he probably felt like his life was in jeopardy most of the time. But that night he couldn't sleep, and he couldn't get back to sleep after he waked up. And so he called for the Chronicles to be read to him, that is, the minutes of the kingdom, the log. That would give you the day-by-day happenings in the kingdom. Now, I'm of the opinion that they were extremely boring indeed, sort of like the minutes of board meetings of church. By the way, I've always felt that that expression, a meeting of the board, is about right, because there's nothing as boring as a board meeting. I tell you, I went through years of that. They start in, the chairman calls the meeting to order, and we have a little season of prayer, and you hear the same prayers you've heard for years, and nothing creative, nothing new. And then after that, we have the reading of the minutes. It's bad enough to go to the meeting, and you'd like to forget it, but you've got to have the thing read last month's meeting. And that's very boring. Minutes could put you to sleep. I could see that. And in view of the fact that the king couldn't call for an aspirin tablet, why, he calls now for these minutes. And I don't think the reading of these would go very long till he dropped off to sleep, because I'm sure they were rather boring. But this time, the man who read, the secretary, I guess, one of his servants that was in the habit of reading to him, and I'm sure he had a sing-song voice that was inclined to put you to sleep, why, he just happened to turn to a certain place. Did I say happened to turn to a certain place? No, you see that little things now are beginning to pile up, and they reveal that God's hand is in the glove of human circumstance. He's moving it. And we see the overruling and overriding providence of God here. Now, it wasn't an accident that this girl Esther became queen. That's obvious now. And it's no accident that she found favor in his sight. It's no accident that she is now gone in and her request has been granted, that is, for him to come to a banquet. But the night before, he's not able to sleep. So they bring the Chronicles in. The secretary turns to a certain place, not by accident. God, by his providence, is overruling. Now notice what happened. The king, I think, sat up, because this was something that he'd forgotten about. And he asks a question. Now let me read verse 2 of chapter 6 of Esther. It was found written that Mordecai had told of Bigthana and Teresh, two of the king's chamberlains, the keepers of the door, who sought to lay hand on the king Ahasuerus. And the king said, "What honor and dignity hath been bestowed upon Mordecai for this?" Then said the king's servants who minister unto him, "There has nothing been done for him." The secretary looked back on the back page, and he looked at another page. He said, "Well, there's nothing here." And the king recognized that this man had done him a real service, this man Mordecai, and he wants him rewarded now. Now, while all of this is going on in the palace, why, there's a knock outside. And the king said, "Who is in the court?" There was noise out there, someone coming in. Now Haman was coming to the outer court of the king's house. You see, he wants to get this man Mordecai slain. And he's up early, too. He had trouble sleeping that night. Two things are on his mind. He wants to eliminate Mordecai now, and he also wants to attend the banquet that Esther's putting on. And these two things are inclined to keep you awake at night. And so he hadn't slept much, and he's there early in the morning. And he'd come in order to speak unto the king to hang Mordecai on the gallows that he'd prepared for him. Now we see two circumstances brought together, not by accident, but by the providence of God. Here it was read in the minutes that this man, Mordecai, had bestowed a great favor upon the king, and he hadn't been rewarded. The king's going to see to it that he's rewarded. But also, in the background, there's something else. Haman wants him killed, and he's in to request that Mordecai be put to death. So you're going to have conflict here. Now notice what happens. Haman had access, easy access to the king, and so they let him in, and the king's servant said unto him, "Behold, Haman standeth in the court." And the king said, "Let him come in." This man had easy access to the king, by the way. He's his prime minister. And it was obvious that he had something important on his mind. At least he thought it was. So Haman came in. Now, before Haman can even get to his request, the king begins to talk. After all, he had the first word. And the king said unto him, "What shall be done for the man whom the king delighteth to honor?" Now, he just asked Haman for his advice. Now, he says, if there's a man in the kingdom, and there's one that I'd delight to honor, what do you think ought to be done for it? And, of course, the king has in mind Mordecai, but Haman has somebody else in mind. Now, Haman thought in his heart, to whom would the king delight to do honor more than to myself? He's thinking of himself. And he recognizes that he occupies this very wonderful position. And so he thinks, well, now what the king wants to do really is to honor me with something special. And I've been invited to dinner. So notice what he says. Verse 7, Haman answered the king, "For the man whom the king delighteth to honor, let the royal apparel be brought, which the king is accustomed to wear, and the horse that the king rideth upon, and the crown royal which is set upon his head. And let this apparel and horse be delivered to the hand of one of the king's most noble princes, that they may array the man whom the king delighteth to honor, and bring him on horseback through the street of the city, and proclaim before him, 'Thus shall it be done for the man whom the king delighteth to honor.'" Now, what do you suppose that he had in mind at this particular point? Well, Haman actually was plotting to get the throne of the Medo-Persian Empire. And he intended to usurp the throne. And I suppose that he intended to destroy the king also. He's a bloodthirsty individual, by the way. And so what he's asking, he thinks he'll be the one that will be honored. Therefore, let the crown be put on the head of this man, the royal apparel put on him, and the horse the king rides. In other words, let the people get accustomed to the man that the king wants to honor. Let the people get accustomed to see him riding through the streets as a king. In other words, he's revealing his hand here in a very subtle way, however, but it's his intention, obviously, now to try to overthrow the king. Apparently, I think that Ahasuerus saw the plot now that's in Haman's mind. Verse 10, "Then the king said to Haman, 'Make haste and take the apparel and the horse, as thou hast said, and do even so to Mordecai the Jew, who sitteth at the king's gate. Let nothing fail of all that thou hast spoken.'" Now, you could never have asked anything of this man Haman to do that to him would have been more displeasing, more ignominious, more distasteful, more hateful than to have to put the royal garments and the royal crown on Mordecai and put him on the horse of the king and lead him through the streets and make the announcement that this is the man that the king delights to honor. Well, this man Haman is really a miserable individual. And apparently the king, Xerxes, begins to see that there's a plot here on the part of this man. But, of course, he does nothing about it because we are told here, then took Haman the apparel and the horse and arrayed Mordecai and brought him on horseback through the street of the city and proclaimed before him, thus shall it be done for the man whom the king delighteth to honor. And instead of doing this for Mordecai, he intended to hang him on the gallows. Now, and Mordecai came again to the king's gate. But Haman hastened to his house mourning and having his head covered. My, this was humiliation to him. And now notice what happens. And Haman told Zeresh, his wife, and all his friends everything that had befallen him. Then said his wise men and Zeresh his wife unto him, if Mordecai is of the seed of the Jews, before whom thou hast begun to fall, thou shalt not prevail against him, but shall surely fall before him. She was a nice little wife, was she not? She's the one suggested that the gallows be built. Now she's saying to him, I told you so, you're beginning to fall. And she has no word of comfort for him at all. Now, verse 14, and while they were yet talking with him, came the king's chamberlains and hastened to bring Haman unto the banquet that Esther prepared. He's going to be late for the dinner that he'd been looking forward to, and the events now are happening so thick and so fast that he can't keep up with them. Things are beginning to happen to his disadvantage. And it is, as it were, he has no control over them. And by the way, he doesn't have any control over them. You know why? Because at that very moment, God is overruling all of this. And God is seeing to it that his plot does not succeed.